This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and happy gardening to our listeners. Excuse me. Yeah.
Look, it's one of those days. It's a bit cool. It's been a little bit windy, but it's going to warm up today. And, of course, we know it's going to warm up as we head into summer. And, Sophie, you're going to talk us through some of the things that we need to do to get our gardens prepared, not just for this summer, but for the weather that we're expecting over the next few years.
Absolutely. You know, the climate is the climate and we can't change the climate. But what we can change in our backyards, in our front yards, in our side yards is we can change the microclimate. And how you change that is by creating shade, by creating shelter from hot drying winds or whatever the drying winds are in your property, and reducing hot reflective surfaces. And in terms of shade, when you're planning for shade, a lot of these processes are longer term. It's, you know, if you put a tree in, it's going to be 5 years at least till it gives you decent shade. If you put a pergola in and you put a vine on top of it, that's going to take 2 to 3 years to cover with that vine. So it's about thinking through what you need, and you might get them planted now, even though you know you're not going to have the benefit for a couple of years down the track. And when I talk about reducing hot reflective surfaces, sometimes people just don't know what to do, so they just pave everything, you know. And that just increases the temperature by 15 to 20 degrees straight off the bat. So, you know, do you need all that paving? Some paving, I get it. It's really practical. But maybe you can have garden area. And people say, well, that might take a lot of water. Well, I tell you what, A, water is cheaper than electricity to cool your home. And there's a great segment I filmed many years ago with a guy called Greg Ingleton, and it's called Smart Watering. And that talks about how we can use water wisely and how gardens will make your home cooler. So, you know, just understand that planning for the future starts now. You know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. Next best time is today. So you could, you know, think about, okay, I need a shade tree there. What could it be? Look around the suburb. If you're going to put a shade tree in now, okay, you're going to have to water it. You're going to have to keep an eye on it as we head to summer. But maybe you even prep the soil so next autumn you can plant it. But what we can do right now for our existing garden is to think about mulching. Now, everyone used to mulch. When there was water restrictions, mulching was just a given. And then I've noticed people have got a bit slack on mulching. So the reason we mulch is it reduces your watering by up to 70%. So that's huge. It basically keeps moisture in the soil. It also insulates the soil. Roots don't like to get hot, neither do worms and all the fabulous microbes that make our soil so spectacular. And it reduces weed seed. And ultimately, weeds compete with our plants for moisture, nutrients and space. So, you know, whatever you can, mulch. Now, there are different types of mulch. There's living mulch. That's ground covers. If you've got ground covers, you don't need to mulch. But then there's the mulch that you'd buy and put on. So it's either generally straw-based mulch or woody mulch. Any mulch is better than no mulch, but if you've got a choice, straw-based mulch is better for your veggies, better for your annual plants. It creates a bacterial-dominated soil flora. And woody mulch is better for your woody plants like your roses, fruit trees, the rest of your garden, because it creates a fungal-dominated soil flora. And if you're in a really fire-prone area and you're twitchy about having mulch, even inorganic mulch, which is like gravel or stones, will work well as a mulch. So mulching is absolutely essential.
In terms of how we water, Sophie, is deep watering preferred over just doing some hand watering or some sprinkling here and there?
So I know for many people, they love getting out there with a hose. And I think something happens when people get a hose in the hand. They become a hose fairy and they're wafting around and they're giving everything a sprinkle. And that's, you need to hand water your pots. Pots, as a general rule of thumb, you aim to water daily. But hand watering your garden, I'm not convinced your water gets down deep enough. So you want water to penetrate 30 centimetres into the soil. That's where you want to keep the root system of the plant. And so the best way, you know, people say, oh, I've got a moisture meter. I don't really trust those things. I know some people that have had huge financial losses because they were relying on a $10 gadget instead of just putting their fingers in the soil. So either dig down to see how far the water's penetrated and see how far that moisture is into the ground. Or you can even get like a garden stake or a metal rod and you push it in the ground. When it stops going, that means it's hard and dry. So, you know, aiming to get water 30 centimetres into the soil profile, you're better to water less often but longer rather than a little bit shallowly.
We will pick up on this topic throughout the morning this morning, so do be prepared for that. But I will say, coming back to your initial point, Sophie, about the future, we need to look at shade, shelter and reducing hot reflective surfaces. Your Wild Thing Garden at the Royal Adelaide Show, where you had the good garden and the evil garden, was a great example of what you should do and what you should not do. So is that still available online? Can you still see pictures of that?
It is, absolutely. If you go to sophiespatch.com.au, you'll see Wild Thing, because it's, you know, it's about rewilding our backyards. And, you know, on a big picture, that's about, you know, bringing life, bringing the birds, the bees, the butterflies in. But it's also about making it more livable for us too.
Just on that issue, before we go to our many calls, and Catherine, hang on, we're coming straight to you. Sangeeta from Linden Park says she loves your invaluable advice, Sophie. But is violet a good living mulch for under the trees? She says, mine seems to be running everywhere and I'm worried about it inviting snakes into the garden.
Okay. So violet is an old-fashioned plant. If you've got it in your garden, you probably can't get rid of it without using a lot of herbicide to get rid of it. It's an old-fashioned ground cover. I wouldn't say it's particularly a good mulch, living mulch. It tends, if anything, it can get spider mite, and it does seed everywhere and run everywhere. So, you know, if you've got it in a small bit and you can get it out, maybe you do. Having said that, I have a daughter called Violet. So, you know, I love, and I remember growing up in a florist shop where we used to sell bunches of violets, and I'm sure some of the more mature listeners will remember bunches of violets that make your heart melt.
Yes.
And if you've ever picked a bunch of violets, you'll know that it takes forever because those stems are so tiny. But, yeah, I would never recommend someone plants a violet because it can tend to – there are forms that don't get out of control, but they can tend to take over.
Well, look, we'll pick up on some of the other things you can do for your plants to keep them healthy through the hot weather. But we've got lots of calls, so call in now on 1300 222 891 to ask Sophie a question. I have a couple of ABC Gardening magazines to give away later, one by phone and one by text. Let's jump to the phones. Catherine is in Henley Beach with struggling Daphne. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi.
How can we help you, Catherine?
I have a north-facing Daphne in the front yard, in the ground. And last summer it started to lose all of its leaves except for the very, very tips that kept leaves. And so now it's sort of flourishing from underneath. So I'm wondering if I should cut these very bare stems off, because there's still tips on top of the Daphne.
Okay. So can you tell me, have you got shade over your Daphne?
Yes. It gets the morning sun, so the hot afternoon sun, it's in shade.
Okay. Because first off, Daphnes are cool climate plants. So, you know, it wants a very cool spot, and under a deciduous tree or something like that would be perfect. They also don't like your soil. So in the ground is a bit of a trick. Are the leaves that are coming back now, the new leaves, are they dark green or are they pale?
They're paler than the older leaves up the top.
Yep.
I suppose they're paler.
And are they full size or are they only half size yet?
No, they're big.
The leaves down the bottom are big?
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, then you could nip the top off. If those leaves down the bottom are full size, that means that the plant can still photosynthesize. The risk is when you cut the tips, you know, that it's got no leaves to photosynthesize. But if those bottom leaves are full size, now whatever it didn't light last summer, so I would be thinking, okay, did it dry out? Was it the soil, you know, that it didn't like? Did it need more moisture in the air? Really, morning sun might even be a bit much for it. So, you know, is there something you can give it shelter with on really hot days? They don't like to dry out, but they don't like wet feet. So it's like, it's sort of, Daphnes are spectacular, but they're like this princess plant, you know, a Goldilocks plant, really. You know, they don't want too much and they don't want too little. So it's finding that happy balance. The fact that it's put new growth on gives me hope that, it's the right spot, but we don't want it to stress like it did last summer. So I would be, and the other thing I would definitely be doing is getting a specific acid plant fertilizer. Because they need acid soil, you can get an organic product in a small bucket that is designed for acid-loving plants, and I'd be giving it a bit every couple of months. A little bit regularly will keep that soil acidic.
Okay, great.
All the best, Catherine. They're heavenly plants.
They are. I love it. It's about 5 years old.
Oh, beautiful. You know. Yeah. Gorgeous.
Okay. Thanks for that, Sophie.
See you then, Catherine.
Thanks, Catherine. Awesome. Marilyn's from Strathalbyn with a question about Noreens. Hi, Marilyn.
Hello. How are you, Deb?
Great, thanks.
I just wanted to ask Sophie if Noreens, I have plenty of them planted in the garden at the moment.
Yep.
In the wrong place. And I was just wondering, could I ask Sophie, when can I dig them up and their leaves have dried off.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if I can replant them, next year when it's time to plant bulbs.
Well, you could I would even say you could dig them up now and replant them in the right spot if they have died down completely. Now, usually we would say summer. So that's January, February, March, right? Now, the reality is often these bulbs have died down by December. While the foliage might have died down, I would like you to do an exploratory dig and see if the roots have all died, because sometimes what happens is the foliage starts to die, but there's still a bit of root growth there. And if there's still a bit of active root growth, I would leave them till they've died down completely and then lift them. If they're in the thing with Noreens, what colour are they? Are they the pink ones or one of the orangey ones?
They're the orangey ones.
Oh, how magnificent. Are they the ones with the little gold speckles in them?
No, they're just plain orange, really.
Okay. Well, they are amazing. And Noreens are, this incredible South African plant, amazing cut flowers. But you want to put them somewhere where you can leave them. You don't want to be moving them all the time. So if you know you've got the right spot for them, even some of the best displays of Noreens I see are outside someone's front fence where they actually don't water and they just exist. But when you move them, put them in their forever home, sunny, not too much water, if at all. And as soon as they're completely died down, then you could start to move them.
Oh, very good. Thank you. And I was just wondering, when I replant them, do I have the top of the bulb sticking out the ice of the ground, please?
Almost. So they don't like to be planted too deep, but things like Noreens and Belladonnas, if you do plant them too deep, what they tend to do is they tend to work their way up a bit. So I would have sort of if the neck of the bulb, how they've usually got a skinny neck, that would be at about ground level or maybe even exposed by a centimetre. Not too much, but just near the top.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sophie. It was great help.
All the best with that, Marilyn.
Thanks, Marilyn. Max is in central Adelaide. And Max, you have an indoor monstera, but the leaves aren't looking very good.
Good morning, Sophie. My monstera is in a plant jar just outside on a balcony, getting shade in the getting a little bit of sun in the morning. It's been doing very well over the years, but it's suddenly, over the last 3 months, it's been getting brown from the tip of the leaf, getting back towards the stem, and the brown is intense, and it's about getting 3 inches from the tip now.
Okay. Now, can you tell me, does it have a saucer under it, Max?
No, it's a big planter, about 4 feet long and a foot deep, foot and a half deep. And perhaps should mention it's in an apartment block and someone's putting granular fertilizer on fairly frequently and watering every day a little bit. And I've dug down and there is moisture down about 9 or 10 inches.
Okay. So the fertilizer wouldn't be causing the problem. If anything, I'm thinking it's either drying out or it's got wet feet. And like all plants, you know, it's being the garden detective to work out what it is. A little bit of water every day, you would be better to give it a really good soak so the water runs through, right, and you know that the whole soil is watered once a week. And if it's a windy, hot week, you might pick that up. Now, the other thing is over winter, we tend to drop back on watering. So the symptoms you're talking about could actually occur from either wet feet or dry. Now, if it's, you know, if it's not wet, the soil's not wet till it gets to the bottom 9 inches, I think you said, that's probably too dry. You know, if you can, if it's in a trough, give it a really, you know, give it a couple of buckets of water. Make sure that water penetrates everywhere.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
And the other thing is to, Max, make sure when you water thoroughly that you see the water run out. Now, if the water doesn't run out, that might mean that the Monstera has blocked the drainage hole, which plants, indoor plants, can sometimes do, so, you know, and that could actually give it wet feet. So I'd be giving it a big drench with a couple of buckets of water, see what happens. If it all runs through, it's fine.
All right. Thank you very much, Sophie.
All the best, Max.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call, Max. 1300 222 891 is the number. We'll speak to Sandra and Karen next.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Sandra from Hackham joins us, and you'd like to have some more butterflies in your garden. Sandra, welcome.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, Sophie. Yes and no. It's more a specific question about the checkered swallowtail, because I had in a patch of my backyard, I had a nettle patch that got to 5 feet tall, so it was a bit of a challenge walking through it. So all the caterpillars, the brown instars, have been eating the nettle right down, and now they're leaving. So I'm just wondering what the next phase eats, because I don't, you know, I'm hoping they're not going to starve, because they apparently go to a green caterpillar before they go to a cocoon, but I'm not sure what they'll eat next.
That's a really good question, and I don't know. I have only just thought that they I need to read up. Okay, I am going to, when we get off the phone from radio, I'm going to be getting out my book, which is Butterfly Gardening, What to Grow and Conserve on the Adelaide Plains, and I'm going to look through, because I've only ever just thought, and it's the Australian Admiral that eats the nettles. And this is why we often promote that you don't have, you know, people panic about nettles, where you leave a little patch just like you've done. And the Australian Admiral butterfly, when you get it back, it is sort of a brownish butterfly with a little slash of cream and a little bit of orange on there. And it's often one of the earliest butterflies in many people's gardens. If you've got checkered swallowtail butterflies, they're the ones that eat your citrus, so they're great too. So, you know, the whole thing about butterfly gardening is it's very addictive. And Sandra, I would just suggest that if you can get onto Butterfly Conservation Society and see if they've got some resources online, you can read up more about the instars. So for people that don't know, instars, you know, insects have a number of different molts in their life cycle, and that's the one. But I didn't know that they had two different coloured caterpillars, Sandra. So thank you for educating me, and I'll be reading up about the Australian Admiral butterfly and what its instars look like after radio.
Thank you. Have a lovely day.
Thanks, Sandra.
You too, Karen.
Yeah, you too.
Oh, Sandra, sorry.
Now, Karen is next, so perfectly you said that. Karen's in Marion. Are you doing a garden reno, Karen?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Deb and Sophie. Thanks for taking my call. I've got an exciting project because I've dug up a small garden. Well, it's my entire back garden, but it's very small. And I've dug up all the old monsteras and cordylines and birds of paradise. And I'm basically up to the next stage, which is putting in the compost. And, you know, I've got a plan for what I'd like to put in the garden with Mediterranean cottage native plants. But I'm just wondering, have I left it too late for this year with summer approaching? What's your advice, Sophie, around, you know, what I should do next? Because I don't want to leave blank soil over summer. What do you suggest?
Okay, so really good question, Karen, and ultimately it comes down to you. So planting, you know, in late spring isn't ideal, but landscapers do it all year round, right? And as long as you water those plants, they will be fine. Now, if you said to me, oh, yeah, I could plant now, but then I'm going away for a month in December, January, I would say, unless you've got a very big watering system, that's a big risk. So if you are ready to go and you get plants in, so you might be going for hardy water-wise plants, but because we're planting them now, you would actually have to water them a bit more than normal to get them through. The other thing is seaweed-based plant tonics. You know, they are absolutely essential to help plants get a strong, healthy root system. And I am out in the desert where it gets really hot, and I'm planting at the moment because I know that plants that I've left in pots and I haven't got in the ground will have less success than plants I've put in the ground, okay? And if you go, well, look, I can't manage the whole lot, but I want to do this bit where I look and where I'm going to be spending summer, other areas of the garden, if you've done the soil prep, put mulch on, right? Mulch is like, even if you're not ready to plant that area, just put mulch on the top. Mulch is like putting a pool cover over your pool. It means the water's there when you get there. The life in the soil can still happen, and it's fantastic. So, you know, you're going to have lots of fun, Karen. If it was a massive garden, you know, acres, I'd probably say slow down. But you said it's a small garden, so I would definitely be doing a space. It's going to give you something to do over summer.
Yes, I'm just so looking. I'm just desperate to get into it, but it's just the time. So, any areas of soil that I don't, you know, areas I don't plant out, if I just put the mulch over the top, like I'll be putting mulch over everything, that
should
be fine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And then in autumn, right, you know, March onwards, March is a great time to be planting if, again, you're around or towards the end of March because the soil's warm. So then all you do is you scrape the mulch back, plant your plant, and you've got, you know, a couple of months of warm soil for the plant to grow.
Oh, that sounds perfect. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
All the best.
Yeah, that's great, Karen, having a blank canvas there to have a go at. Hope you enjoy that. And look, some of the issues I think that Karen raised are really what you're talking about when we are talking about preparing your garden for the summer, Sophie. And you've already talked about making sure that you plan for the future with your shade, shelter and reducing hot reflective surfaces, that you need to mulch, which we're getting a few questions on that. I've been asked, which mulch keeps weeds down best?
All mulches will help to suppress weed seed germination, but ideally you should get the weeds out first. Now, if you've got a lot of weed seeds in your soil, I would say sheet mulching, which is a technique where you put down newspaper or cardboard. Ideally, you wet it. You know, if you know, well, look, this was really weedy. I've got the weeds out, but I reckon they're going to be back in a flash. You actually throw a bit of organic fertilizer down. You put newspaper or cardboard down, and then you put your mulch on top. And that's how I have reclaimed acres for my past few gardens, and I'm doing that out here. You know, the one thing, you know, ultimately any woody mulch is great. You know, we're looking at, depending on what you've got planted, if you can, a couple of inches up to 5 centimetres of mulch. If it's coarse, the most important thing is you don't use a really fine mulch. I don't think any of the retailers sell fine mulches anymore, but, you know, sometimes people get compost and mulch confused and you want a coarse mulch. A coarse mulch means if we get a little shower of rain, rain will actually make its way through that mulch layer to the soil. If you've got something fine like a compost, the rain gets absorbed in the compost layer and never makes its way down to the soil. And the other advantage of a coarse mulch over a fine mulch is if you have a fine mulch and wind passes over that fine mulch, it'll actually wick moisture out of the soil to the air. So you want to use coarse mulch, so that will let the moisture into the ground still.
And what is the best living mulch, asks this texter.
Any ground cover. Because sometimes people get confused. They go, how do I mulch under this ground cover? You know, if you've got Myoporum, which is creeping boobiella, great Australian native plant, butterflies love it, you know, bees love it, all sorts of creatures love it. And people go, well, how do I mulch it? Well, you don't. So what ideally you would do is when you would be planting that, you would put mulch down and then your plant grows over as a ground cover and then you don't need to remulch under it.
Great. And finally, Jocelyn from Mount Barker asks, what is the best mulch for pots?
I would use a woody-based mulch, right? And there's all sorts of different products. Because generally in pots, we've got our favourites. I'm looking out the window. You know, I've got a special kumquat. I've got some succulents. They're all plants that would prefer a woody-based mulch and they look neat.
Well, that's fantastic. And thank you to our texters here saying the only green spot I have on my farm is the lawn. Frosty's saying, aerate your lawn while the soil is still soft. I'm halfway through mine, just using a garden fork every 6 inches, plunge and wiggle, water with a soil wetter. Thanks, Frosty, for that advice. And some beautiful photographs being sent in to us. Hoyer's enjoying the morning sun called Elvina and Margaret, named after our 92-year-old friend who grew them for us from a cutting. They're happy just doing their thing, says Michelle, and they look lovely. Thank you very much for that picture. And also Kay from Murray Bridge says, I've picked this from the rose garden in a retirement village. It's a single rose but has 18 buds at its centre, and we don't know what that anomaly is. I don't know if you can help us on that, Sophie. Why on earth would a single rose have 18 buds at its centre?
It sounds like it's a bit of a natural, what will we call, deformation. You know, it's done something quirky, so either an insect damage at formation. Because I can't see that picture, I have seen things where flowers produce another flower from the centre. So, yeah.
We will continue our talkback gardening. The phone line is 1300 222 891. The text line for your comments is 0467 922 891. We've got a couple of ABC gardening magazines to give away also.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson
on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb. Great day to be out in the garden when you can.
Exactly. If you're not at the Christmas pageant, hopefully you are in your garden. And we've got some lines free if you'd like to ask some advice from Sophie on 1300 222 891. Later, I'll give away a couple of ABC Gardening magazines, one by phone and one by text, if you haven't won anything from the ABC in the last month. We've been talking about green spaces this morning in Talkback Gardening and how to make sure that your garden is prepared for summer. Sophie, I think, will give us a few more tips on that. But the phone line, 1300 222 891, and the text line for your comments is 0467 922 891. Pam is on the line from Owen, who wants to transplant a rose. Welcome, Pam.
Good morning. A week ago, I bought a Pierre de Ronsard rose. It is in a 20-centimetre pot, and the rose itself is about 30 centimetres high. Do I plant it out now or wait till autumn?
I would definitely plant it out. Now, I'm going to assume, Pam, that where you're going to plant it, the soil is reasonable or you've improved it. And then I would plant it out because if you leave something in a pot, you're going to need to water it daily, if not twice a day, all the way through till autumn. And if you're anything like me, I have been known to neglect pot plants on the odd occasion, not deliberately, but because you get busy or whatever. Whereas in the ground, if it's reasonable soil, if you've improved it with a bit of organic matter, you've added some organic fertilizer, and then you put mulch on top, that plant will be insulated. And as long as you keep the water up to it, it'll actually grow. So, yes, I certainly would be planting it out now if you can. I know you're in a hot spot, but, you know, same around here. I'm trying to get any plant I can into the soil because it's got a better prognosis than staying in a pot.
Yeah, fortunately the weather is good for planting out roses at the moment, but it's not good for the farmers.
Oh, I know, absolutely. And, you know, we're also expecting that, you know, we're both in hot, dry areas. It'll be hot and dry over summer. So, you know, seaweed-based plant tonics for anything you're planting out at any time of year really do improve the plant's resistance to heat and drought stress.
Terrific. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Pam, and let's hope things change for our farmers at the moment. Meg is in Westbourne Park. Now, Meg, you've got a question as to a certain type of mulch. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning. What I'm interested in is biochar to be used as a mulch. Now, whilst I live in Adelaide, I do have land and high mustiers, and I make my own biochar. And for people who don't know what that is, it's where you use a kiln to burn small pieces of wood to char it. And whilst it's still hot, you douse it with water. And in that water, I put seaweed solution so that there's minerals in there. And then what you do is crush it. And then you add something like wormweed to activate it, and you incorporate it in your soil. Now, in the recent Macclesfield newsletter, biochar newsletter, they threw out the challenge of people what they thought of using biochar as a mulch. And I just thought, I wondered whether Sophie had any ideas.
Okay,
so it's black.
You know,
it's black.
Well, that's right. And I have seen that people have used it in combination with an organic mulch and had great success, right?
Oh.
So not just as itself. But I'm sure someone's used it as a mulch. I just haven't heard about it. But I know people have incorporated it in their mulch later. So for people that don't understand, biochar is just a long-term way of storing carbon. It increases water retention, and basically it provides a home for all these amazing microbes we want in our soil. But generally, people are using it in the soil, as you say. So, you know, a thin layer of it would be fine. And biochar is not just charcoal. It has to be done in a low oxygen environment, and it has to be quenched at the right time. So if you're interested in this, please Google it, because there's a lot of science behind it. But I'm not familiar with anyone just using it as a mulch by itself. So, you know, maybe you need to do that. And also, you know, we're talking generally when you're using biochar, we're talking small amounts, okay, because basically it is alkaline. So if you're using large amounts, it might be ideal, but you're talking small amounts. So I would be thinking a smattering under an organic mulch would be fantastic, but it depends how much you got, Meg.
Oh, well, obviously, well, I'm making it all the time. I do a couple of kilns worth each, you know, out of the season when you can make fires. As in, I can't do it now because we're in the ban.
No.
I'm just going to keep on making it, because I think it's a fantastic way to get rid of all your prunings and just store carbon. So I do it to store carbon, but also to incorporate into garden. Yes, yeah,
absolutely.
I love your idea of incorporating it with organic mulch. That totally makes sense to me, because then it won't be black.
No, then it won't be black. And also, you know, you're talking a small amount. If people are interested, there is the Macclesfield Biochar Group. It's a community group, a whole lot of guys. I met one of them up at Corn, at the Quandong Festival, and I've met them before too. And so if you're interested in knowing more, I would say to, you know, get in touch with that group and, you know, attend and find out how they're doing it. But you're right, it is obviously not something we're doing during fire ban.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I don't use Facebook, but they do have a Facebook group. And because they've put out this challenge of using it as a mulch and what people think about it, there probably will be activity on the Facebook. I might have to join Facebook just to get that.
Meg, creeping into social media. Good luck with that.
I hate that idea.
I know. I'm with you on that. Thanks, Meg. Good luck with it. And so what about just charcoal generally, if you've had a fire and you've got charcoal and ash?
So this is actually a little bit of ash can, you know, a little bit of ash, but we tend to be alkaline, so you don't want to use too much ash. In the eastern states where they've got acid soil, they can use ash to what we call sweeten the soil, which means make it less acidic, more alkaline, but we're already alkaline. So if you're going to use ash, you use it very sparingly, a little bit maybe in your compost, but not much.
Okay, thank you. Wendy's in Evanston Park. Now, Wendy, what has been invading your raised garden bed, please?
Millipedes. The little seedlings come up and then they eat it. And I found one this morning, so I've tossed it away.
Yeah, so are you sure it's millipedes and not slaters?
It's a millipede. I've got it, I had it in my hand and I put it in a container. It's one of the Portuguese.
Yeah. That, so they can do that, but the ones that are usually causing more problem are the slaters. Do you see those in your gardens too?
No.
Okay. So if that's what you've got, so what you need to do when you put your little seedlings in the ground, you need to put some sort of protective cover on them just while they're little. By the time the seedling's been in a couple of weeks, its stem is usually thick enough and creatures like millipedes or slaters that eat organic matter can't affect it. So how you could do that is you could get your plastic milk bottle, cut the bottom off, cut the top off, and you just put it on like a collar, and it makes a huge difference. I have a whole heap of black plastic pots that I've been carrying around for the last 20 years that I've cut the bottoms off, and I do them as a collar, but it's not ideal heading into summer being black plastic. The milk bottles are much better heading into summer. Right. The black plastic is better for winter. And as far as, once millipedes are in a garden area, what you can try and do is they actually like high protein. So if you put a little bit of cat or dog food out of a tin in a saucer, I think you'll find they'll all come to that and you can dispose of them that way. If you had ducks, they like millipedes. That's not probably going to work. But they're also attracted to light at night. So even if you put a little solar power light and a little bit of mulch and a dish with high protein, they'll go to that, and then you can get them out.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes.
All the best, Wendy.
Thank you.
Thanks, Wendy. Irene's at Engle Farm. Now, Irene, you've got a suggestion about planting out from pots. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, when we moved house some time ago, we had a lot of stuff in pots, but it was not the right time to be planting. So what we actually did was bury the pots into the ground so that at least the plants had a better chance of getting along without the weather being too adverse, and then they got watered along with the rest of the garden.
Okay, interesting, Irene. Interesting. Keeping black plastic pots, my favourite gadget, it travels in my handbag, is my infrared thermometer, and I'm always measuring. And the soil temperature in black plastic pots over summer can get in the mid-60s. And as I'm always saying, root tips die when the soil temperature gets in the 40s. So if your roots are dying because the pot's getting too hot, anything you can do to keep that pot shaded is great. So that's an interesting hack. I would say, though, that I would still prefer to get those plants out of that black plastic pot, because those roots will keep growing as long as you provide what they need, which is water. So there is a product, and actually I was going to talk about this. We've talked about seaweed-based plant tonics. They help root systems get established. They increase a plant's resistance to heat and drought stress. And then there's a cheats product, really. It's called an anti-transpirant, and it is a product that's like putting sunscreen on your plants. So if you end up planting and then all of a sudden out of nowhere you get like a 35 degree day and you go, oh my gosh, my plant is probably going to die, spray it with an antitranspirant and it stops the plants losing moisture from its leaves for about a month. It can be a game changer, particularly when you're establishing plants in a really harsh spot over the first summers. It makes a huge difference. It's because sometimes people say, I don't understand. I've driven past and I've seen landscapers planting on a 40-degree day. How can they do that and those plants live? Well, they're always using an antitranspirant. So it comes in a ready-to-use structure, ready-to-use, 750ml bottle, or I think it's a 2.5-litre bottle, and it can be the difference between plants living and dying.
It would have been interesting news 20 years ago, but I'm sure somebody else has got good information out of that.
Good on you, Irene.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Irene. Nice to hear your hack. Very good indeed. Anne is in Richmond. And Anne, you've got a question about native everlasting flowers. Hello.
Hi, Sophie. Hi, Deb. I have a little mini meadow of everlasting flowers, and it is a beautiful, beautiful carpet of flowers at the moment. And I'm wondering, what is it that I do next? They're currently flowering beautifully. I'm going to cut some to dry some. But I'm wondering what to do next. Do I cut them back? Do I let them die down? And I'm not really sure of next steps.
Okay, great question, Anne. Can you tell me, are these the really ethereal, dainty pink and white ones, or are these more the chunky, shrubby ones?
I think they're Rodanthe something or other.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So what you want to do is, certainly pick some to dry some, but you also want to harvest the seed when it's dry. So leave the plants. Don't cut them back. Leave the plants as long as you can. And when the plants look like they're dying or the seed, you crush the flower and it starts to crumble away, that's when I would be pulling them out and putting them in a brown paper bag. Some might self-seed naturally if you can keep that space suitable for them. But otherwise, I would be harvesting the seed for next year. So,
Sophie, do you have any suggestions on what I could plant in there? If there are some that are self-seeding, I'd like to be able to encourage that. Can you suggest anything else that I can plant after or as well as?
Well, I'm not we probably need Matt from the Botanic Gardens, because I've been noticing that as you walk through from Hackney Road and you're walking through into the gardens, on the left-hand side there's a bed of paper daisies, and it always seems to have paper daisies in it. So I'm thinking they must be doing multiple plantings. So maybe, Anne, we can follow up with that and see if you can do multiple plantings for a – to get several successions. Yeah. So leave it with us. We'll follow that up and find out.
Thank you so much, Sophie.
And when Sophie says leave it with us, she means leave it with me, because she is the one that's going to follow it up. Thanks, Anne. That's a really interesting question. We have got a few minutes left of Talkback Gardening. I've got quite a few calls waiting, so you can take your chance if you like on 1300 222 891. But if you haven't won anything from the ABC in the last month and you'd like to win one of our ABC gardening magazines, you can call in now on that number, 1300 222 891. We'll give one away to people listening on the ABC Listen app. If you would like to put your full name and full postal address and send that through to 0467 922 891, we've got a couple to give away.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson
on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Talkback Gardening is what we are doing. Mike in McLaren Vale is up next with a crepe myrtle question. Hi, Mike.
Sophie, I planted a crepe myrtle about 3 weeks ago, just over a metre high, about 30 centimetres from the base. I got a couple of side shoots shooting away, and then I got a gap of about 80 centimetres for a healthy top. Should I cut these side shoots off?
Well, ultimately, it depends on what shape you want your crepe myrtle to be. Generally, broadly speaking, we say there are two shapes that people create with their crepe myrtles. One is a single trunk, where you've got a clear trunk and then the canopy on top, and then you would take those shoots off. The other is a multi-stemmed, where you have multiple shoots coming all the way up the base, and then you'd leave it on. So it depends what you want in terms of, looking through your plant and the structure. In my garden, I've got some that I've got as a single trunk, and they have branches for about the first meter or so. And then I've also got some that I specifically asked the nursery to have ones that had shoots at the base. Now, the shoots at the base weren't as established as I would have liked, but I'm letting them have multiple stems. So if you go into the botanic gardens and you look at some of those old crepe myrtles that are 20, 30 years old, in there, you'll see that most of those are multiple stemmed. And the reason we like multiple stems is crepe myrtles are known for their incredible bark. They have this beautiful exfoliating bark, which even when the tree is completely bare, that bark is a feature. So it's up to you whether you want a single trunk or a multi-stem.
Okay, thanks for your help.
All the best with that, Mike.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Karen is in Ironbank. Now, Karen, you would like to transplant an established lemon tree. Welcome to the program.
Hi, yes. We've got a lemon tree that's directly under a gum tree, and we've recently established a new garden bed in another part of the garden, and we'd like to move it. Just wondering if it's the right time now. We are now going away for 2 weeks at the end of November, so it's either, do it now or do it in December.
Okay. Now, can you tell me how big is this lemon tree?
Oh, it's probably only about a metre and a half, but it's been in
so
the ground
it's small.
For over, yeah, but it's been in the ground for over 20 years. It's just been in such
it's
a...
It's been stunted, the poor darling.
Yeah.
So because you're going away for a couple of weeks, and it could be warm while you're away, I would actually be inclined to wait till you get back. I planted my citrus grove at Mount Barker in late November, and out of 21 trees, I can't remember that. We might have lost one, right? So that was, the soil will be warm enough when you get back, because Ironbank can actually have quite cool soil temperatures, and you wouldn't want to, you'd want to make sure the soil temperatures are above 16 degrees, 18 degrees would be better. So if anything, I would wait till you get back and do it straight away. But then obviously you're going to be around to, keep the water up to it. And you're going to use seaweed-based plant tonics, The old trick that Ian Tolley talks about is you touch the leaf in the middle of the day, and if it's not cool to the touch, it is dry. So you're going to keep the water up to it. So I would, if you're only away for 2 weeks, it's early to mid-December, I'd still be doing it then, Karen.
All right, excellent. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Karen, for the call. And congratulations to our gardening magazine winners, Stan in Spalding and Susie in Normanville. We'll be sending those out to you today. Now, Rose is in Forest Range with an avocado question. Hi, Rose.
Hi, Debbie. Hi, Sophie. How are you?
Yeah, great, thank you.
Sophie's backyard, so she knows where Forest Range is. We've got a heap of avocado trees that fruit all year round, and they're looking very, very sick and sorry. So we're trying to establish, we know that they can get root rot. Not quite sure how to tell that they've got root rot, but the leaves have gone very yellow and mottled, and we're just trying to work out whether we treat them for root rot or whether they need fertilising or... pruning.
Okay. So, Rosie, I'm going to assume that these trees have good drainage.
Well, reasonable drainage. They go around the edge of an enclosed pool area. Reasonable drainage, yes.
Okay. And when did they start to get these mottled leaves?
It's actually my daughter and son-in-law. It's actually been happening over the last 6 months.
Okay. And the pool isn't salt water or anything like that, is it?
Well, the pool's fully enclosed and is below the trees. So,
So that's not it. But it's not salt water?
Good question. No.
Not totally. Okay.
it's a chemical pool.
I'm actually... avos, if they started to go back once it got cold, that could just be cold water and they're hungry and they're it's been wet and avos really don't like the cold weather so much. But if it was something that was happening before the cold weather, you know, that could be something a little bit more undesirable. I'm actually going to suggest that you contact the Rare Fruit Society. Now, while avocados aren't rare fruits, the Rare Fruit Society actually started as the Avocado Society. Back in the, 20, 30 years ago when avocados were pretty exotic. And so there will be someone that is an avo expert. I do know there's a guy in Cherryville Way that has lots of avos and is a member of the Rare Fruit Society, so he might be a goer. But contact the Rare Fruit Society, send photos, see what you think, because, yep. It is all about being that garden detective to find out what's going wrong.
Correct. There's no way of telling if your soil's no good that is causing the root rot, because root rot's too much water, isn't it?
Well, no, there's all sorts of things like Phytophthora and other soil-borne problems, maladies.
Yep.
So, ultimately we're trying to work out if it's a nutritional deficiency with those leaves going yellow and mottly, or there's something else. So that's where there'll be someone local that's an avo expert that can give you information.
Yep. Beautiful.
All the best.
We'll give it a try. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Fingers crossed. Fancy having avos all year round. It sounds like heaven.
Well, there's 20-odd trees and it's just, amazing. It is.
Yeah.
Fantastic, Rosie. Thank you very much. And you are our last caller this morning. So many texts, Sophie. There's no way we can get to them all, but I will read you a couple. Phil from Woodside sent some beautiful photos of roses blooming beautifully. Andrew from Maiponga says, we've had a resident echidna who aerates our lawn most nights while we're asleep.
How gorgeous.
Exactly. When we wake up, voila, craters everywhere. Thanks, Andrew. And Stephen says, thanks for your morning garden program. I'm using Warrigal greens between my raised garden beds and it grows like crazy. Needs some water, but trampling and weed control works really well. That's great, Stephen. And Kylie at Port Augusta says, Sophie, thank you for checking out her cottony cushion scale specimen and your advice for her lemon tree at the Quorn Quandong Festival. The treatment is underway and improving. And a shout out to Emily too. Thank you. And Phil from Woodside has also sent through some carnivorous American pitcher plants.
Oh, they're amazing.
Sarracenia looking beautiful in full flower. Jordan in Golden Grove says, want to say how infectious your laugh is, Sophie. Always makes me smile every Saturday morning and puts me in a good mood for the weekend ahead. And this texter, Anonymous, says exactly the same thing. It's great hearing Sophie's knowledge, enthusiasm. It is so inspiring and her laugh is so genuine and cheers us all up. So thank you, Sophie, for cheering us all up. We got through pretty much all the things you wanted to talk about preparing our gardens for the summer. I guess the only issue that is outstanding is we need to have some shade, don't we?
We do. So, as we get into those hot days, we might talk about options for temporary shade structures.
Okay, great idea. Sophie, you are off doing lots of work in your garden, I'm sure, this weekend.
I'm gardening today. I'm so excited. I've got a weekend to play in the garden. How awesome is that?
That is fantastic. Will you enjoy?
I certainly will, and happy gardening to all our listeners.